In honor of the holiday season,
we're going to spice up today's podcast intro
by sprinkling in some specific seasonal additives.
We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the Exemplary DM Podcast. I'm your host, William Jingle.
And this is co-host Chad Eggnog.
In this podcast, we hope to provide examples in reusable material to you, the DM, to use in your stories and campaigns, sleigh bells.
We hope to inspire you with functional content that you bring to your own table, Aaron Neville.
To the delight or potential misery of your players, Traffic Jams.
This is a podcast inspired by years of playing Dungeons & Dragons from both sides of the screen, Snow.
And also by our friends at the table, Fruitcake.
Who have helped us get to the point where we are confident enough in our geekery to do a podcast about it, Gifts.
This podcast is not intended to be safe for work, Gift Returns.
Or suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D table drunk Santas.
So get out the caffeine.
Or beer.
And prepare to embark on a fantastic journey to realms unknown.
Separation of church and state. Nerd. And well done, by the way.
Thanks.
I handed over the reins, and I think it went well.
I didn't do the walking.
I appreciate that you didn't do walking. I think people get enough walking in the little bits at the end there. But bump it. We just bumped it. You might have heard it, but it happened.
You said little bits at the end. Welcome to the Exemplary DM Podcast. This is episode 6 of season 1.
Which is the best season so far, I think.
Definitely. Today's podcast topic is how to start your campaign.
Yes, that's exactly what today's topic is. Very good, William.
All right, thanks.
So you have probably noticed that we have been going through a progression of how to sort of get a game started, how to get yourself up and running, and we're going to continue to do that. Mm-hmm. Our last episode was all about how to build a world, and before that we've talked about DMing styles, and if you're following along, with the exception of the one that we did with your brothers.
Right, we did an interrupted podcast for Play by Post.
Bit of a departure, yeah. But basically, we're trying to walk you through your own campaign. That being said, let's do this thing.
Let's get it on. We, in the holiday spirit, Ian and I, our co-host from last time, were talking about gifts that we were giving each other. Mm-hmm. And one of the gifts that he suggested that should be given is an eBay listing, which we tweeted about Friday night. It's an eBay listing for D&D Dungeons Dragons, I'm quoting there, miniatures minis, complete sets lot.
Take no chances that somebody is not going to find that listing with the title.
She took a thesauratical approach to naming the auction.
Yep, new word. That's 2011's truthiness. I'm calling it right now.
Thesauratical, yep. The auction is for a buy-it-now price of $4,999.99 for, let's see, how many? 20 complete sets of Dungeons & Dragons miniatures, every set except the latest Lords of Madness set, which just came out. Can't be expected to have everything.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. All stat cards included, as are the 21 Epic Promo stat cards. You will not find a more complete collection anywhere, she writes.
Hmm.
The beginning of the auction says, "My husband is selling his collections of Dungeons & Dragons miniatures."
It's a terrible impersonation of a woman, by the way. It was not good at all. Not impressive.
We are going to kick off this podcast with a Letterman-like top 10 reasons she is selling his D&D figurines collection.
Huzzah! I'm super annoying Paul Schaefer. Hopefully our top 10 is going to be a little bit less rapey than Letterman's, but, so, you know what? I kick people when they're down.
Drum roll. I'll insert a drum roll, sound effect here.
Okay, you better.
All right. Top 10 reasons she's selling his D&D minis collection. Number 10. Needed the money to complete his scale model of the O3K64 Firefly class salvage vessel.
Well done, nerds. Number 9. The kids unexpectedly got into college. Surprise!
<What a buzz. laughs> Number 8. He doesn't use them anymore ever since Cataclysm came out.
Number 7. He quit his campaign after reading the latest Penny Arcade comic saying, "Fuck y'all bitch-ass motherfuckers."
Number 6. He started playing Pathfinder.
Ooh, dangerous ground. Number 5. They needed a keg of Jones Bigby's Crushing Thirst Destroyer Limited Edition Dungeons & Dragons Spellcasting Soda.
Very good. Number four, she caught him having sex with the, quote, gargantuan orcus figure.
Well, he's not going to go for the tiny orcus figure, right?
No, of course not.
You're ridiculous. Number three, he started referring to himself as the malicious throbbing member of Vecna.
Vecna. Number two, she realized he spent $5,000 on plastic figurines and $3,000 on her new Kia.
And number one, our top reason... Inserting a drum roll again?
Yeah, it's inserted.
Okay, we're just doing it. All right. Number one, LARPing doesn't pay for itself.
There you go.
Pussy!
Last time we set up the world, this time we're starting off the campaign, and we're going to cover three basic topics here. The first, how to bring your characters together.
Sound place to start.
Number two, how to start off the plot with the right mix of railroading and free choice.
Mostly railroading.
And number three, how to keep your players together once the campaign has started.
A fantastic third point. I really can't think of a better one.
You're over the top today with the praise, sir.
Positive reinforcement, it gets a lot done.
So, number one, how to bring your characters together. Let's talk about physically, how do you put the characters in the same place? Do you even want to? Eventually, unless you want to violate number one rule of D&D 4th edition, just don't split the party. You have to get all the characters in one place, so how do you do that?
Right.
Let's give some examples. Number one.
You can start them off in separate locations and bring them together during the first session.
This is something you guys did really well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, positive reinforcement.
So, yeah, what we did in our first session, we being Ian, who was our guest last week, and myself, because we are now co-DMing.
Last week.
It was not last week at all, was it?
We can pretend it was, though.
Back in 1952 when we did our last podcast. So what we did in our first session was, since we had two DMs, we decided to go ahead and take advantage of it. I ran half of the group through an encounter with a dragon that was very exciting. They started off on one continent, and this first little vignette with just half of the players ended up putting them on the continent where everybody was going to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other group, Ian, my co-DM, was running the other half of the group, and they already started out on that continent and went through their own little adventure. So basically what we did was vignettes where the characters started off separately, but ended their little solo adventures together.
And not necessarily something you have to do, or you could only do with two DMs.
Right,
you could definitely swing that yourself. Maybe your first campaign session is split. You only have some of the players show up. Maybe your first campaign session is done via email or online. Just to bring people together, to give them the background of having their players start off in different places.
Right.
Some of the players in your campaign now are familiar with the territory that we're in, and some are not. And I think that adds some to the dynamic of the group.
I agree with you. I agree. That also helps if players have backstories that are not immediately geographically connected.
That's a good point. Another example of how to bring your characters together is to start them off in a crowd. Crowd being a very generic term, we could use them as a crowd in an arena. We could have them on some sort of public transit. In the fantasy world, obviously, we're not talking about buses, but maybe like a boat, a ferry, a caravan, a wagon caravan, something like that.
Absolutely.
They could start off as members of a royal court, just one of many people in the royal court. A platoon of soldiers in an academy, a la Neverwinter Nights.
Mm-hmm.
In a marketplace, which is what your campaign did. Or, of course, a tavern, a bar.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the other example, start them off alone, but nearby. Kind of like the video game, Curse of the Azure Bonds, which I know is based on a book, but I never read the book.
And I never
did play the
game.
Video game. You start off, basically you're all prisoners, and you kind of break out of jail together. Maybe they're all in an inn, in a hotel, they're all in their rooms, and something happens at night.
Sure.
Maybe they're all passengers on a boat, which is what I used in my campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all in different parts of the boat, and when something happened, they all came together.
Right.
All right, so that's how to bring your characters together. We gave you a lot of different examples. It's definitely something you need to do.
Sure.
You got to get the people together in the same room. Otherwise, there are logistical issues. Combat becomes very boring to the people who aren't physically there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can get very creative with this. In some cases, having your people physically, geographically split up. In general, you will want to bring your characters together. Those are some examples of how.
And one point, actually, that we don't have on our notes, but might be a good way to do it is...
Who wrote these notes? What was your...
I don't know. Yeah, awful. Awful. But I've heard of some DMs basically saying, all of your characters are going to begin in this town. Now you tell me how they got to this town.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So whatever your backstory is, wherever you're from, you better figure out a reason to put yourself in this town, and that's where we're going to start from.
Yeah, for my campaign, which I started, I said, you're all on this boat. It may or may not be up to any good for what it's doing, for what the captain's doing, but you're all on this boat. I don't care why. You tell me. One of the players decided to get together with another, and they decided, well, my player has been captured and is being escorted by the other player. Mm-hmm. One of the players was just going from continent to continent, didn't want to know anybody, wanted to lay low. Another player was journeying this direction and had come from very far away, and this was just another leg on the journey. They can use your initial setting of telling them, hey, you're on this boat, hey, you're in this tavern, hey, you're in this royal court, hey, you're up in this tree. And you can have them go from that and give them some lead time for that, a week or two before your session starts. Tell them, this is where you have to be. Figure out a creative way to get there.
Yep. And it's worth mentioning that the players, in a lot of cases, will come up with stuff that's cooler than what you come up with anyway.
Absolutely. Almost as a rule.
Almost as a rule. Not when I'm DMing, because my things are fantastic. But, yeah, a lot of DMs have that problem.
All right, so how to start off the plot with the right mix of railroading and free choice. And I think the most important point, and the only point I have on the notes right here to make, is to create purpose. You can have them be against somebody, an evil wizard, an evil king, an evil ex-girlfriend. you can have them be for somebody, or coming to the defense of somebody. Or you can have them coming to rescue somebody.
Mario and Princess Peach style.
You need to give them some sort of purpose there to hit the middle of the spectrum between I'm telling you exactly what we're doing here and... hey, this is a world. What do you want to do? There are a lot of different ways that could happen. Basic survival is an option. I started my campaign off with, well, you're all shipwrecked on that boat that I told you to get on.
So it's important to note that in most cases when you start an adventure, whether this is actually a Wizards of the Coast produced adventure or whatever, they always start you off with a hook, right? So they always start the PCs off with a purpose. And they tell you you're going to these ruins to find this artifact or whatever it is.
They're either going to find something, they're going to search something out, they're going to clean something up. And it's not just, clear up what we mean by purpose, it's not just the first quest.
Sure.
It probably should be something bigger, something that helps define the characters, something that helps define the party. If you find that your party is just kind of gray, they don't have much going on, make sure you're not just giving them a whole bunch of short-term goals.
And that leads beautifully into our third point, which is how to keep your characters together.
Right. Once you've started them off, once you've put them all together, they realize they don't like each other. How do you make them stay together? Right? Players are going to stay with the group. Well, most of them anyway, unless they're being a douche.
Sure.
They're going to stay with the group, but they want their characters to want to stay in the group. So how do we do this? And my number one strategy for this is to have them do it for you.
And this sticks with our rule that we established earlier, which is they will likely do it better than you can.
Award your players for team-building role-playing. And here's some examples. Dialogue that some of your players might consider unnecessary will be golden to others. So at or away from the table, maybe even via email, have them discuss things between missions, between sessions. Have them discuss what went on in character. Make sure their characters are doing this discussion.
Right.
And what that does is it builds a camaraderie. Even if they're fighting, even if they're arguing. Players will also generally not get into mortal arguments unless they're being a douche.
Right.
Which would drive an unremovable wedge between characters in the party.
Mm-hmm.
So, encouraging them to have that conversation is a really good idea.
Right.
Another way to keep their players together, use the character's inventory and promote the interaction of inventory. Make sure your players aren't playing it like, this is my character sheet, this is what is on it, this is all I have access to. Make sure they realize this would be better used for you. Maybe you should be carrying this torch. Maybe you should be holding this end of the rope.
Exactly.
Maybe you should have this potion.
And this is a cue that you can even take from some video games and stuff like that, where you team up in pickup groups, like in City of Heroes or WoW or something, and you generally roll for loot, but in this case, you talk it out, right? The characters discuss among themselves and decide, who gets what, and if you, the DM, right, don't automatically say, okay, you, rogue, you get this dagger, and you just say, hey, there's a dagger here. They're encouraged to figure out on their own that the rogue gets the dagger.
And it's more than just divvying up loot. Sometimes in the loot you give, don't make it specific. Make it something that more than one person could use. And when they're at the table, make them in character try to decide whose character does this fit, who could use this in combat better.
A good example of this type of item was in your game when you gave us that skull that dimmed out lights. Right? So that was a completely utility item that wasn't specific to any one person or any one class or anything. But that encourages a sort of inventory interaction that we're talking about that builds teamwork.
Yep. Yeah, I gave a dark skull. It's one of the things in one of the books. And they had to decide, you know, should the rogue carry it? He already has all the stealth he needs, probably. Maybe the least mobile guy should be carrying it. Or maybe the healer. Maybe somebody of a different role should be carrying it. Maybe the leader should be carrying it. The other thing to do is to encourage, out of combat, but in character, battle planning. Characters should be talking about the next fight or how the last fight went in character, but after the battle's over.
Right.
Maybe when they're on the horses going from this place to that place, or they're camped out there for a night. This isn't to optimize the battle by any means. This is to encourage them to talk about how it went and make them look at the combat from a character's point of view, not just the player's point of view.
Right. And this really came to bear in my first campaign that I was running, where actually... You, William, your character was very leadery. We had a fighter in the party who was sort of coming into that leader role, and we had an angry barbarian who wasn't so much a leader, but a fuck you guys, I'm going to do my own thing kind of guy. So after battles, this happened on numerous occasions, we had a couple of the characters talking about strategy, what went right, what went wrong, and the barbarian being like, we need to do it better this way. And, you know, they all had very, very different approaches, and so they were all discussing amongst themselves exactly what William was talking about, battle strategies and tactics and who needs to be where, and it was all going on in character, and that's the key point.
A couple things in that the three-person situation, there were more people in the party, but these three people happened to have a very good conversation at one point. The character I was playing was a druid who turned into a wolf in the middle of battle.
Right.
Shouldn't really have been that involved in battle planning in the middle of battle, and should be approaching the perception of battle as someone who really was kind of disconnected from the communication process.
Sure.
Same thing with the barbarian. When the barbarian goes into rage, he's not expected to be calculating risks, calculating, I should go here and flank this person.
Absolutely.
And even after combat, that person should be aware that their character is not going to have been thinking, well, it would have been better for me to flank this way. The character should be thinking, I was in rage, this is just what I did.
Sure.
Make sure your characters are staying true to their concepts then when recounting battles.
Exactly.
All right, so very good. Another way to keep your characters together is to use their character hooks to interrelate the character's plots. That's a lot of big words right there.
It is. Tell us what you mean, William.
We're going to get into this next time, so let's just end it right there.
Okay, good.
We're going to get into it next time when we talk about how to help your players build their characters, how to work with character hooks, how to do a starting biography of your characters when you're starting up a campaign.
Sure.
One PC's goal now goes through another. One character now needs another. One character is a means to another character's ends.
Sure.
This is the kind of things I'm talking about. Characters are going to have different short-term and long-term goals. It is going to be the DM's job and the player's job to make these things mesh together.
Right.
One PC perhaps is fundamentally, religiously, or honorably tied to another PC.
Sure.
Use built-in character limitations or strictures, especially with divine classes. You love fucking with them. Use those to set up the character relationships. Use the power sources, especially.
Yeah, it seems like in the character generation process, as William and I have observed it, it seems most common that primal characters specifically tend to stick together. So when you have a druid and a shaman, for instance, in the same party, they're probably going to be BFFs pretty quick for some reason. It kind of happens with divine, but really only if they have the same deity or same type of deity.
Yeah.
But with primal, it's they're worshiping the same primal spirits, dude.
Some reason, that's more universal than all the other sources.
Right. And psionics probably would be as well if you weren't too terrified to let them in your game.
I don't like them in my head.
No, you don't. It scares you and it makes you cry.
I don't know. I just think that psionics is not in my high fantasy kind of genre. I don't think Warforged work either in the kind of game that I want to run.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're kind of a close-minded bigot when it comes to fantasy. So, all right. No, bigot was too strong a term. I'm sorry. Well, I'll make that up to you later.
And fuck halflings.
Ridiculous.
Another way to keep your characters together once the campaign has started is to draw connections to players from outside sources. So, for example, the PCs have been prophesied, ordered, or otherwise connected by some third party. Not necessarily an omnipotent third party. How they accept or reject that is up to them. Regardless, though, that prophecy is still there. If some people in the party reject the prophecy, if some people in the party want to ignore orders, it's still there. If the whole party wants to ignore the orders, it's still there for you to use against them. Bring in the cops, bring in the angels, bring in the prophets, whatever you want. You can use something like that kind of hangs over their heads. How they treat it is up to them.
Sure, and that provides a lot of convenient mechanics for those of us who are a bit more railroady.
I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah, because we can be like, hey, you're not following this prophecy. You all of a sudden have some sort of lung disease. So you can, you can really use this sort of prophecy, this, especially if you make it like something divine or mysterious, this binding force, you know, if you make it something powerful.
Yeah. You know? But it could also be just a king's orders.
Sure.
Or a benefactor has kind of brought you all up from the little shit children you used to be. And at the beginning of the campaign, he tells you to go take somebody out or to go do this or do that.
Sure. And since we are the exemplary DM, we should... just a jazz hands too. I don't know. You guys couldn't see that, but you did. So the example that immediately springs to mind is shockingly the one from my own campaign. Where recently the characters found out that they all have a connection to an ancient kingdom from the last age and about which next to nothing is known there. And they've been christened the Golden Hand of Sedalgara because there are five of them. I thought a hand would be cool.
Nice.
And so basically this is an ancient kingdom and there's sort of a mixture of prophecy and divinity and history and all of these things connecting all of the PCs in various ways to this kingdom. Some of them it's through bloodline. Some of them it's through experiences that they've had or even items or weapons.
Or roles they play in society. Yeah,
sure.
Very, very cool. Yeah, we saw like a mural in this place that we had found ourselves in that had something that kind of resembled each one of us in this ancient mural, which linked us all together. Very, very, very cool visual image.
Thank you.
And some more examples of drawing connections to the players from outside sources. Maybe now they're all wanted.
Oops.
And they didn't realize it. Maybe now they're all cursed, like Curse
also
of the
oops.
Azure Bonds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe now they're all united by a tragedy or united by something really good happening. But they don't know each other otherwise.
Sure.
All right, so very good. I think it is time to move on to the... We're out of practice.
We pretty much are. I don't know. Maybe we can do like some sort of elaborate music video like OK Go involving treadmills.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
Insert music video here. Mm-hmm. Yourself. Yep. Very good.
Maybe just go watch the OK Go video, in fact.
Alright, the recurring gadgets of the podcast, the part of every exemplary DM podcast where we go through five things that you can apply directly to your campaign, your new campaign, your existing campaign, your dead fuck off campaign.
Yep.
Whatever you want to do, you can use them right now.
We're in sweary moods today. That's...
Well, and that leads me to a tangent. You had a theory that our string of bad luck involving not being able to podcast for decades upon end.
Sure.
Was that we had somehow offended the podcasting gods.
Right.
With a lack of swearing.
I did mention that now. Yeah, yeah. I think I probably even wrote it down in some sort of soon-to-be holy text.
So, why don't we just get ourselves on the good side of the podcasting gods right now?
Right, do some fucking gadgets.
Balls. Encounters. Of shit.
Shitstorm.
Butts.
Yeah, we're bad at this.
There will never be an episode 7. No. We have now offended the podcast
and
gods.
And we've lost our funding, if anything.
What will we do without our funding?
Yeah, so, all right.
Call today and we'll send you a free exemplary DM mug for a donation of only $75.
Right. It's not going to be like exemplary DM. It's just going to be a mug that we have in our house.
But we'll give you one. got an NPR mug they could have. That would be ironic. This is the kind of quality programming that only exemplary DM could bring to you, and which is why we need to have a funding drive every 10 seconds.
Yes.
All right. Our first gadget of the podcast is the encounter of the podcast, where we provide you with what?
So it is.
The encounter of the podcast, something that you could take directly into your game or perhaps a delve right now. And this is one that I ran in my campaign a couple years ago. It's called The Dryad and the Shambling Mound.
Bum, bum, bum.
Both of these are characters, or monster creatures in the Monster Creature Manual, Monster Creature character.
Sure.
They're both in the Monster Manual.
Good,
but you see, it's not as fun when I say it that way.
No, it's really not. That seems like a really dumb name now.
They're both in the Monster Creature Monster Manual.
Right. We should call Wizards
Manual. The Dryad is in disguise as a tribal. They were going through a jungle that had a lot of primitive tribal villages around, so she was in disguise. The Dryad has the ability to shape change. She was disguised as a young, fair tribal girl who had a jug who was getting water from the river.
She had two jugs, probably. Oh, snap! High five, loudly so they can hear. All right!
That was your own hand!
That was my
Damn
own.
It.
All right.
Upriver, of course, once the dryad pulls the character is in, upriver the water stream kind of lessens, and they turn upriver and they see this huge wall of carnivorous plant coming at them.
Ooh.
The dryad kind of vanishes, goes to the trees, does her attack and vanish thing. The shambling mound just generally wrecks them.
Yeah.
And it's very, very cool, though, with the imagery to set up the encounter of the girl at the river, and then the river starts running dry. Maybe it's like some blood starts running through the water as it lessens, as the shambling mound comes through. And then in the shambling mound, they find the corpse of a young girl that the dryad was impersonating.
Yeah. Sure. That sounds terrifying. That sounds just downright terrifying.
Yeah, that was right before you started the campaign, actually.
I see. Well, I'm glad it was, because I would have had nightmares. But no, it's a very cool thing. It's woodsy, so if you're out in the wilderness, traditionally dryads are kind of all over the place, like out in the woods. Like they're common.
Yeah, and they could be pretty evil, too.
So, oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep, so just have your dryad lure your party to a shambling mound party. So that's our sample encounter of the podcast, The Dryad and El Shambling Mound, which is Spanish for The Shambling Mound.
Very good. Now, our next gadget of the podcast is the t-shirt idea of the podcast. And this is something that's going to be up on our show notes on our blog, exemplarydm.blogspot.com. Thank you very much.
Yes, well done, sir.
Today's t-shirt gadget of the podcast is something that we bring you every day because we feel very strongly here at Exemplary DM that wearing a boring, regular, sports-related or even just non-D&D-related t-shirt to the gaming table is an insult to whatever thing you think might be in charge spiritually of D&D.
There you go. I think that probably was the smoothest way you could have said that.
I tried to be generic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, here at the Exemplary DM podcast, we give you a t-shirt idea every podcast of something you can buy and then wear. This one comes from the Penny Arcade Store, and it says on the front, something that noobs need to remember, but even veterans sometimes forget. It says, Move Minor Standard.
And the shirt is appropriately named One Turn T.
Ha ha!
Elementary. Okay, so that's our t-shirt idea of the podcast. Move, Minor, and Standard.
Very good. The character concept of the podcast is something we bring to you every time to tell you about a character concept for a PC or an NPC, good guy or bad guy, something that you could use or adapt. And this one is called the Akhari Mercenary, and that's just something I gave the name, but the basic idea is a tribe or a culture of people who live on primitive rafts or ferries in the wildlands, and they live on the rivers. And so somebody from one of these cultures would have very specific fears about maybe being on land, very specific safeties about being on water, very specific traditions about sharing a meal, about fishing, about approaching strangers. So you can build a whole culture around this person, and this person who is now a mercenary, who has decided to leave this culture and join a land-going mercenary team. There you go.
And it's pretty cool. The river folk, the Akhari mercenary.
All right. The DM tip of the podcast is something that every DM could take and use right now at their table. And our tip today is to apply the senses.
And tell us a little bit more about that, William.
And one of the things I mentioned earlier is that Chad had introduced a very cool visual stimulus to us at one point in the game. But It doesn't end there. I think that very good story writing, very good just novel writing, which is very related to being a DM,
sure,
is to apply the reader's or the experiencer's senses when they would not otherwise be applied.
Right.
When you're reading a book and you can smell the blood that's in the room, you can taste the iron in the air, that really immerses the experiencer in the thing that you're just telling them or that they're reading. Tell them what it smells like. Tell them what it tastes like. Taste is a very powerful scent. It's very related to smell. It's related to lots of guttural sensations. It's related to the clamminess of the skin. It's related to your skin becoming very hot or very cold. It's related to your face becoming flushed. If you smell something really bad or smell something really good, and you can taste that thing without having tasted it.
Sure. Probably the most common bit of advice that burgeoning novelists will get and give is show, don't tell. Ooh. So that's exactly what we're talking about here. Show the players where they are, communicating to them how their senses are being provoked.
Yeah. What do they hear? What do they smell? What does the air feel like in here? Is it thick? Is it dry? Is it hot? Is it cold? That's the sense of touch.
Sure.
Don't just tell them what they see, is, I guess, the point of that DM tip.
Absolutely. That's our DM tip. Apply the senses.
All right. Now a player tip, something that every player could take back to their own campaign right now.
Don't be a dick.
That's right. And they cannot be a dick by explaining how their powers look, how their players learned them or acquired them. Every power source can do this, even the primal ones. They can explain how it took them X amount of months communing with this kind of animal in this place where they grew up to learn how to do Iron Fists, Mountain Rage, Rock, Stone, Dragon, Punch.
Another name improvement. In addition to the Monster Manual, we're going to pick a power at random and write wizards telling them they should rename it to whatever William just said that I can't even repeat.
Not even going to try. So, if you're a warlock, you should be able to explain to anybody in your party on command, and then sometimes just for the fun of it, what your Eldritch Blast. What your Eldritch... What that thing that's the at-will standard for every warlock looks like. What does it sound like? Does it crack like lightning? Of course, this could be different for everybody. This is not something you read out of a book. This is something you make up. When you're a warden and you do that strength of iron, strength of stone iron, iron mountain, myron of myron, stone mountain.
And now all of a sudden I feel like we're playing Pictionary or something.
When you're a ranger and you're doing twin shot, do you fire them at the same time? Do you fire them at two different targets, one after another? And how did you learn to do that? Were you just always that cool? But you should have in the back of your mind, even if you're not telling everybody every time you do this, how your character learned how to do that.
Sure.
I think that's a really good thing to help you flesh out your character, to really just make them more than a character builder piece of paper.
Right. And you may have noticed that this is very, very closely tied into our player tip of our last episode, which was do the same thing with your feats.
Yeah.
So basically our point of these last two player tips is flesh out your character. You know, make your character stand out and, like William said, not just be a bunch of words on a character sheet.
Speaking of the new character builder, it's all web-based now. Have you had a chance to use that yet?
I have had a chance to use it, in fact.
What do you think?
I like it in general. I like it because now they're going to be updating that instead of the downloadable one, and the updates are going to come faster and more frequently.
Yeah,
so I think that's definitely a positive. I think if you are a new player starting off trying to build your first character, or you've only built, you know, a couple of characters in the past, it's going to be very, very, very helpful to you.
Good.
I think if you're an experienced player and you've gotten used to the downloadable character builder, it's going to be a bit cumbersome at first, but I think we'll all get used to it. We're not all curmudgeonly old men, so I think we can learn to adapt.
Very good. Well, we'd like to hear from you what you think of the new player character builder. We'll talk about that in the next podcast. But meanwhile, you can write us at exemplarydm@gmail.com, or you can leave us a comment on our blog at exemplarydm.blogspot.com. I have mastered. Finally, six episodes in, I have mastered the name of our podcast.
Clearly you have.
I can
Clearly
say it at will.
At will, literally.
On a whim, I can say the name of our podcast.
And you do it quite well, sir.
But if need be,
mm-hmm,
I can do it.
You could if you wanted to.
Thank you for joining us for Season 1, Episode 6 of the Exemplary DM Podcast. I am your host, William.
I have been Chad. That's not okay with you?
Join us next time when our topic will be how to help your players build their characters. and specifically, how to use character hooks.
Thank you and good night! Huzzah!
You know, it's I'm consistency. It's not the ability to do something right. It's the ability to do something right consistently.
Yeah, right.
That's why I'll never make it into big leagues. It'd be helpful if I pulled it up.
Let's do that.
That's what she said.
No, come on. The last episode, we said the second rule of podcasting. Terrible.
I'll start again.
Yeah, you should.
You know what my problem is?
Hmm.
I'm doing this with dark socks on.
Is that the problem?
Yep.
Oh, so we're going barefoot. All right. It just got real country up in here. It just got real country.
We're podcasting barefoot.
Yep. No, I hope it's okay if I do the whole rest of the podcast with dip in my mouth. I don't even know what somebody would talk like with that. Probably not like this. This would probably be ridiculous. Now you just sound like you're on a CB.
We're talking about... Ray Rigger, I got a podcast coming through here. We got a strike campaign.
We're doing that again. I don't know why I let you ride on my coattails.
We're doing that again. What the Eldritch Blast. Now that's a tongue twister. This podcast brought to you by the Alliance, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the victory over the Browncoats at Serenity Valley.
This has been a production of the Tribe Stand... Free Enterprise Association.